Welcome, fans of Zack Snyder's Justice League. In this special episode of the podcast, we are going to turn it over to Zack Snyder himself as he does a detailed trailer breakdown. This is from Vero True Social, and all credit really goes to Vero, so we have a link to Vero in the show notes and a link to Vero's YouTube video that captured this. We also have a link to the trailer if you haven't seen that yet or if you want to see it a few more times. And the next voice you hear will be Zack Snyder's himself. This has just been lightly edited to take out some of the pauses as he was reading the fan questions.
Before we get started, I just wanted to say thank you guys for the amazing effort getting us our ASFP. And I went live with that page, the Autumn Tribute page. So that's a great place to go to, get your, to make a donation. Don't forget also Ink to the People. There's a million cool t-shirts, not a million, but it feels like a fair amount. And also the new Dark Side shirt, which is really cool. Alex Vardy did an amazing job with that. So that sounds like a great thing to maybe go grab. So hopefully everyone's on. So in a second here, I'm going to try and start the old share of the videos. So I'm going to share screen. I'm going to click on this QuickTime player, and then I'm going to share it up here. So you can start at the beginning. I'm going to play it through once. I know you guys haven't seen this. I'm just kidding. I'm sure you've seen it. Maybe not. But I'll play it through once, and then I'm going to go back to the beginning, and we're going to just break it down shot by shot.
Now I've heard there was a secret David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this: the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the
fought hundreds of thousands of other super beings on the other planets. He's destroyed, right? And we have to assume he's won.
I don't care how many demons he's fought and how many hells. He's never fought us. Not us united.
Okay, so there it is. Also, in all of its monochrome glory. Steph and I always wanted to, you guys probably realize and know that I, for a long time, the movie lived with me in what I would call, on my computer. And it was the way I watched the movie for 2 years or whatever in black and white. And actually it was a black and white that I had to sort of create myself. So it wasn't, as rich as this. And I look forward to coloring the entire movie professionally in a really rich and beautiful monochrome and being able to do all the little tricks, printing tricks that I love. So we'll see that. I feel like as we develop this, it'll even be even more custom. So that's exciting. So this shot of this first shot of Darkseid is, you know, there's a question that I saw about Darkseid that in the theatrical cut, apparently Darkseid is replaced with Steppenwolf in this early sequence. Now, that must have been was a redo, because when I was involved with the movie, it was always Uxis here. So there, it's probably not difficult, and we've done it many times, to use the motion capture that the actors were able to do on set. I believe in this case, that was Rich Citron, who was Darkseid. Rich also is Ben's double for a lot of the Batman stuff, the crazy fighting. And Rich has been in every one of my movies, that including Guardians of Ga'ul, where he did some little bit of motion capture for that, you know, played a owl. So you know, there's a few lifers, and Damon Caro, you know, there's a that I would say have made it, you know, in some way or another through every iteration of every movie. So that's fun. And so what they would do is probably in this case, Rich on set against the green screen and motion capture suit. He had a stick, and you know, he dug the earth up because he felt like the anti-life equation was here. And then he had to pound the earth to reveal the anti-life equation, which we in the movie, you know, sort of you see it in a physical form, which is all those patterns of lava that exist on the ground. And so that's how they're able to visualize it. And so that would have to be deciphered to figure out how the anti-life equation actually could be put into practice. I think that, you know, Uxis at this point in his conquests of Earth, I got a question here about how strong Uxis is, young Darkseid compared to, let's say, like Zod. But I think that, you know, young Uxis is super powerful compared to the rest of the, you know, the only thing that, you know, could really stand up against him is the old gods. And here you'll see him fighting with Zeus and Ares and the rest of the sort of the defenders of Earth. As they are seen, and the old king of Atlantis. So he's, that's him pounding the earth. This image, this next shot is Superman's, the death of Superman at the hands of that crazy monster that we let loose on the world. Lex was crazy to let him loose, but Doomsday is, you know, just about as scary as a monster as we could come up with, other than the next one that we come up against, which Uxis and Steppenwolf are pretty much comparable, I think, in some ways to those two. Although, you know, you could argue the sort of mythological strengths of both of them, and that some are more than others, but, you know, specifically for Superman, you know, this moment is really iconic to me, and you'll see how it influences the sort of what happens in this movie. But that's a little bit of a reveal. This shot is a chock-a-block of all sorts of questions, and the one thing you could see is you could see the Thomas Wayne portrait that I have, you know, I have here at the house. And a bunch of the other cool things I see. You guys have, I'm sure, scrubbed through this and seen a lot of things. I don't want to like give too much away with this shot because there's a lot of sort of cryptic messages in it. And I don't want to explain too much of it because of the fun of having to go through this shot and kind of try and put together the pieces of the puzzle. But suffice it to say, a lot of the pieces are in this shot what's planned. You can see the armada of our apocalypse as well as the apocalyptic tech and some fire pits, which also we saw in BVS in the nightmare future, which you guys have all seen, I'm sure, is the Joker card. It's floating through that's the same card that was taped to Batman's gun in BVS in the nightmare sequence. You can see the Omega symbol out there and give you some idea about, you know, where you are in relationship to the to where we were in BVS. Some logos, Warner Brothers, DC, you're familiar with. Here's Diana at the Shrine of the Amazons. You can see the arrow of Artemis stuck in the ground back there. And she has gone to collect it because on the shaft of the arrow, there's a few clues as to, I would say, one, Diana's possible return to Themyscira, and two, the location of the actual hidden Shrine of the Amazons. And this is her sort of confronting the arrow, and you can see sort of she's at this sort of Greek ruins. I really like the shot too because of this kind of wide low angle with this sort of cool Acropolis. There's a question I have here, and that is, did Ares kill the old gods explained in Wonder Woman? I think that's consistent with the mythology that would have taken place before that. That whole fight with Uxis would have taken place before any of this betrayal of by Ares with Zeus. So that's that would be mythologically sort of still within the construct. Here's a shot of during the conversation at the Wayne Aerospace hangar, and I wanted to clear up. A lot of people think that this is the Batcave that they're in here, and it is clearly not the Batcave. Those are windows with light streaming in. I don't know how people would think it was the Batcave. The Batcave is underground, and so it seems odd to me that one would confuse this with the Batcave. This is, Bruce hasn't really, when he first meets these people, I don't think he's going to bring them directly to the Batcave. They still have a little bit of trust and development that needs to happen. Beside Wayne Aerospace is where the sort of defunct part of Wayne Aerospace is where he's been building the Flying Fox, because it's too big to build in the Batcave. And so the transport that he developed there was developed for the military probably, and maybe never sold or never got to, the prototype never was able, he was never able to get it working. If you look you can see there's a number of them sort of in various states of construction within the sort of Wayne Aerospace hangar that is built out there. So it's a pretty, and that's this projection of this hologram is being projected, of course, by Cyborg out of his, there's a question here, is Cyborg projecting, is is the cyborg project Superman? And the answer is yes. This hologram projection is coming from Cyborg. But yeah, let's see what else we got here. It's an interesting, and then we have, you can see this is Ben, and this is more another scene in the Wayne Aerospace hangar, and Ben, or AKA Batman, you know, contemplating the rebirth of Superman, and that, you know, what is to be done. This is the Welch fishing village that we built on at the airport in England. This pier was built out there, and if you look, you know, here in the background, this this house, we built all this little village at kind of quarter scale. So these buildings are like kind of miniature buildings that we built in the background to make it look like they were full-size buildings and further away, but they're actually just kind of one-third scale buildings. And if you look at this shot, you can sort of see the buildings. Let's see if you see them pretty good there. Yeah, you can sort of see them pretty good, like this guy and this guy. The main tavern that we built and the pier is at full scale, and then these little buildings back here are kind of smaller. And we got like kids' bicycles and some other things to make the scale back there work for the shop. And it was really fun to do. And then, you know, of course, the shot out on the pier had a lot of, these giant water, sorry, I was looking at the question. We had these giant water tanks that would just blast Jason with these hundreds and hundreds of gallons of water out of these huge cannons to make this effect of him being out in the storm. And then we shot this ultra high speed shots with the super slow motion cameras to get him to walk out there, and then scanline finish the ocean. So it's fun to do that stuff. You know, and Jason's a good sport for standing in there while he's getting pummeled with this giant water cannon. Okay, so here's Vic Stone playing a football game against Wisconsin at GCU. Looks like a winter game. And we shot this on stage in England. My son, Eli Snyder, did the choreography of the football and was helping out all during this section. He worked with Ray because Eli was a quarterback, and so he helped Ray with his some of his skill training there, and Ray did a really great job and really passed the eye test, as they say in the football recruiting world. He looked really, really good and did a great job with this football scene. And so this was all snow that we shot on the day. It's artificial snow that we pumped in, crowd. We built those bleachers, you know, on stage in England, and had to get English football players to play the football, you know, from the English Football League. And of course, there's a question, where was Silas during this scene, I think is the question. And of course, you know, Silas is too busy in the lab. He's missing from this. There's an empty chair there, obviously. So sad. Yeah, this is a Cyborg's mom. And celebrating her son's amazing victory at this particular football game. This next little bit is, you know, we see some kids playing football in near Vic's house in Gotham. And this is a thing we shot in Leavesden in England, you know, on the back lot. And then literally in this building, right to the side there, that's Vic's apartment. We had, you know, this moment here where Victor is watching the kids out there and remembering. So I have this question that says, I read somewhere that Cyborg roams around with a projection camouflage. Is that true? I don't know. It's cool. I mean, he probably could do that. We don't have him do that in the movie, but he certainly probably could. It's a cool question. Then we see this shot of Vic watching the kids. And, you know, he's there in his Gotham City, you know, sweatsuit, his football suit. And this is a question, where has Cyborg been hiding ever since the accident? And yes, the answer is, yeah, he's kind of been, you know, and he and Silas talk about this during the film about him kind of being reclusive now, and he feels trapped in the apartment and he doesn't know how to be out in the world. And it's kind of like, what is he supposed to be now that he's a cyborg? You know, what's his role? And I think that's really a big exploration of sort of his place, takes place. There's a lot of that in the movie, which I think is really, that's a big part of his arc, you know, where's his place? Here's a shot of Superman emerging from the scout ship and in his black suit, gloriously, I might add. I don't want to give too much more about this other than it's just the epic. It's the same door he came out of in Man of Steel. Here's Wonder Woman. After a little sequence where she's rescued these kids, and she is one of the girls is she and one of the girls have a little interaction about like, you know, can I be like you one day? And of course, you know, Wonder Woman answers her with a resounding yes. And that's cool. Hang on, let me just see what I got here. Oh, that's a good question. Question is, how many Kryptonian people are on Earth other than Kal-El? Well, the easy answer is only Kal-El, but there's always, that's a kind of an open-ended, I don't know, you know, a lot of people, if you study Man of Steel and in this film, there's reference to the open sleeping crash, which is when they walk by it on the scout ship, when they're bringing Superman's body into bring it back to life, there's a sequence where they go, they're kind of walking through that same hallway that Kal-El walked through, when he first came into the scout ship. And there's a moment where he kind of wipes the dust off of one of the sleeping crushes and sees the sort of shriveled Kryptonian inside. Now, next to that crush, there's an open crush that just looks like someone clearly got out of that. And who that is remains a mystery to this day. So we'll see. And there's the amazing Gal Gadot, who one could not want a better Wonder Woman than Gal. Sorry, I can't get it to stay on this shot. It really doesn't want to do that, does it? I'm really trying, guys. Oh, there it is. Just amazing. She's just an amazing embodiment of Wonder Woman. And I couldn't be, I couldn't be luckier than to get her to play Wonder Woman. I remember when I, you know, brought Gal in and when we did our first casting with her and, you know, when I saw her from the very first, I was like, okay, that's her. That's my Wonder Woman. And, it's been an honor to work with her ever since. Okay, so here's This is Barry at in the doggy daycare sequence, we call it. But it's because he's applying for a job as a, at this sort of pet store, and this accident happens outside, and this is him, his first, our first introduction to his use of sort of Speed Force and his powers and everything like that. And we get a really get a glimpse into. Now, one of the things that I've done in the film, you know, I don't like Barry being able to move people. I know a lot of people love that aspect of it. I just don't, and it's fine. And I think it's cool when people do it, but I just don't. I think it's very, it goes against physics to be able to have, if you grab someone and you could say they're protected by the Speed Force, but that's, you know, up to interpretation. But I feel like if you grab someone at the speed he's moving, you could just like literally just tear their arm out of its socket, or like, you know, he's moving so fast, it would just literally peel the flesh off of somebody's body. So he's got to be super careful with humans inside of the Speed Force. So that's a thing that I find really, that we've really had a fun time playing with. Where are his shoes? I have a question here that says, where are his shoes? Where are Barry's shoes? And the answer is that if when he goes into the Speed Force or starts to move in this world, his shoes are basically, you see, in the movie, we have a shot where he turns and the shoes just explode off his feet because they're not ready for that. And so they don't, you know, they wouldn't be able to, a normal shoe would stay together. So it just shows like how he needs his suit, really. You know, he's able to do this because, you know, he saw this girl that was, you know, compelling, and he wants to, you know, he's moved to save her, but, you know, he wasn't ready. So it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun to play with the realities of what would happen in that world. Here's a little cool moment where like time comes back on, and it's kind of a fun little beat where we see boom, 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 boom. And like, you know, Iris clearly doesn't know what happened, but she's taken with this stranger that she's come in contact with. So that's kind of fun. In JL, will we see how Barry got his powers? No, we don't go into that mythological. That's a big piece. And I felt like we do explore, of course, the relationship with his father. But I left that that piece of story still out there to be told. And, you know, would love to get at it at some point, but we'll see. Yeah, I think, yeah, are we gonna see Barry Allen's struggle in his life is another question from Creepy Soul. Yeah, I think we will. You know, the reality, the truth is that Barry, how he's, like, what is he doing? He wants to, you know, he's trying to get a job in this forensics lab, and, you know, he wants to help vindicate his father or get him out of prison for the, you know, the death of his mother. There's a lot of stuff happening with Barry, and a lot of seeds planted that have yet to, that I'm excited to see more of. So I'm gonna keep going down here. Boom, amazing. Kelsey, this is like, for me, Iris is an amazing, cool. I mean, we don't see her a ton in the movie, but it was fun to have this moment. Crazy cool. Here is Vic digging, just a quick shot of Vic at a graveyard digging. But I'm gonna leave this shot. I'm gonna let you guys, I just say we shot it on stage in England. This is the This is the, sorry, I keep having a hard time with my little cursor here. This angel statue, though, is our angel statue from Watchmen and Sucker Punch. Ben on the gargoyle. This shot, I always wanted to do this amazing classic Batman gargoyle shot. This is on top of the Gotham City Police Department. And we have a shot of, Patrick built me this crazy, scary skeleton gargoyle with its placard and stuff. And I said, yeah, that's perfect. I think there's a miniature of this, you know, that I have that Patrick built me. It's like it's a pretty big sculpture of it. It's, you know, like yo big, and it's pretty amazing. And I thought it was a really cool little piece. Let's see. It's just cool lightning. I just dig that. Here's this moment between Lois and Martha, and shot this again. We rebuilt this set. This was a set we built for BVS, and we built it again, and in England, built this the apartment again. Built it in Detroit, and then built it in England. That's always fun, and to see these two amazing actresses, you know, deliver this kind of really beautiful, emotional, you know, just talking about loss and moving on, and how to live in a world without, you know, the person you love most. It really became really poignant for me in the making, you know, as I looked back on this movie in retrospect with all the things that have happened, you know, all the sort of water that's gone under the bridge. This scene in particular, you know, really strikes me as beautiful, and Amy delivers like this beautiful and poignant moment. And Diane's amazing, of course. It's really fun. They're really great to work with. This is Valko, who kind of is the, you know, clearly Arthur and Valko have a relationship. I feel like Valko is sort of the custodian of Arthur's mother's trident, and that from time to time, Arthur has used it, trained with it, but Valko holds it for him. And the shot from BVS would have been one of those moments where he had it. But the armor is a thing that he only in this movie does he decide to don in this, you know. And this is Valko is talking to him about, come on, like, it's time. And then there's a cool crab up there walking around, which is just fun. This is the moment where, you know, he and Mira are talking out like what his responsibilities are. And then he leaves sort of Jim Morrison style, which is, you know, very Jason-esque. And yeah, and then there's Mira wondering what. This is actually a shot from earlier in the movie where she's worried about what's happening with this. She's kind of one of the guardians over at the readout, the readout, I think that's what we call it. That's the old ancient Atlantean, before the Atlantis descended under the waves, it was an above the ground world. And this area was where the mother box was placed. And you can see that it was actually designed and built when Atlantis still existed above sea. And so now when you see it, it's kind of underwater, and it is there's still staircases and bridges, but they're all submerged now because it's descended. But that is the ancient resting place of the Mother Box that the Atlanteans protect. And so we see Mira here, and Mother Box is starting to shake for some reason, and she's concerned. Here's Uxas. He's summoned to the Mother Box. He's revealed the anti-life equation. He's creating the unity. He's pretty much, this world is in the bag, I think, in his mind. And he is, he's just getting ready to sort of take control of not only this world, but of probably the ultimate weapon in the universe. And he is, but he doesn't realize that he's about to face off against these very determined protectors of Earth. And, and they're pretty tough, and they do offer him quite a surprise. But those are the priests of the Mother Box back there. Are they kind of, and then that's part of the armada. You can sort of see the mother ships up high, and these are all the drop ships. Really had fun designing and sort of creating this world. I really like this sort of crazy sci-fi Lord of the Rings world that I, designing it was really fun. And I really loved, just the details of how we put this together. And you'll see a lot more of it in the movie. Desaad. Oh, geez, Desaad. Desaad is kind of, in the movie, acts as sort of go-between between Steppenwolf and the dark side. He's sort of the agent that Steppenwolf sort of interacts with in his conquest of Earth to sort of give him updates, and they kind of interact through this sort of super cool hologram. I won't describe how it's done, but it's crazy. And I think that it, he offers us a lot of backstory about Steppenwolf and Darkseid's relationship, and then also his own ambition, I think, in some degree. But he's scary. This is in Star Labs. We have Vic is, trying to figure out what to do with his, some events that just took place in the, in Star Labs. I don't want to spoil it too much. There's a little bit of info about it, but Cyborg is doing like Ray's doing an amazing job of, just reflecting all that pain and all that, the hardship of being a son, but also being like trying to find your place in the world and like all the things you never said, This is an image of the newly born Superman, obviously. And I drew this, shot, it's very specific, teeny figure in the sky. I always loved this idea of this, these images of Superman that I've made over the course of these three movies, and sort of putting him up in the sky for us, because it is that combo of him being in the sky and also sort of being among us. And I think that it's fun. Here's a question about the air bubble. Why the air bubbles? Well, to my way of thinking, and this differs from Aquaman in some degree, and we had always planned this, and then in Aquaman, they chose a slightly different tact, and I'm 100% fine with it. But in the Justice League version of Atlantis, the Atlanteans, when they speak English, it's not, they can't push water across their vocal cords and make words. So they have sort of a different language. And that's kind of what you're going to see in the movie. So that's why the air bubbles. And Lois sees the impossible. So Silas committing a selfless act. In the end, he is the he knows what he has to do to mark the Mother Box. So again, I don't want to give it all away, but you'll see there's, he's got a plan. And there's some spiky dude behind, behind Pick there, and that he's distracted. Rich Citrone again playing Steppenwolf, and all of our monsters are played by Rich, and he's really good at it. And then you have this shot, which is a slightly Dr. Manhattan-esque shot, and so fun to do. Here's a shot of the Batmobile in Pozharnov firing its miniguns. And it's being chased. I think you can see him up there barely. There's like a whole horde of parademons chasing him at this point. And Batman's trying to divert the army, divert the parademons so that the team can make their way into the reactor. Let me just see. Does Silas regret creating Cyborg? I don't think he does. You know, in my opinion, I think that he wanted to save his son. Yeah, on one hand, he didn't know what the mother boxes were going to do, what the mother box technology was capable of. And frankly, I don't think we still know what Cyborg's powers are. You know, if you look at what the apocalyptian, what these mother boxes are capable of world creating, world destroying, you know, I think what Cyborg has, what he's seen what he's able to do is really just the tip of the iceberg compared to what is possible in maybe in the future for him. Some parademons getting wrecked by the Batmobile. Okay, here's Hippolyta. Hippolyta, however you want to say it, I'm not going to argue. In the battle to get out of the Penetralium, and she does this cool move where like the parademon almost got her, but I feel like she's got her sword and something's going to happen to that dude. But she's run up the wall and she's coming down. So parademons are, you know, they're not super smart. I don't mean to be rude, but they just seem, you know. So here is the landing of Steppenwolf. This is the, now we, this was the original design of Steppenwolf, as you've seen in BBS. There were discussions and a lot of back and forth about the new design and the creation of this new design. I think the initial thought was that he was a little too scary and a little too alien and a little too, you know, intense. You know, I personally thought he was awesome and that he represented like a real threat and does represent a real threat to not just the Justice League, but to the entire planet. And he's the conquest of Earth, you know, we learn is just like not, he's done this so many times that this is like nothing to him. So, you know, I think he looks amazing. And, you know, the team has done a really great job in just making him real. And frankly, the fights he has, like with Wonder Woman and with Jason, and then the team at the end of the movie, really, really fun to do because he's really, Rich did a lot of his motion capture. You know, Rich is an amazing athlete and a great fighter and we really created some great moments with him battling the team. So that was fun to do. Yeah, and here they are getting ready to square off for the first time with Steppenwolf, you know, and these three are going to work together to really like, and they have to almost work as a team because he's that powerful. And he's got that electro axe and he's really, you know, going nuts. And so it's good. It's fun. Hey, let's see. Yeah, is that Steppenwolf's body or is it his armor is the question. And it's armor. You'll see sequences. There's a sequence in the movie where he pulls it down. You sort of see him naked and you really get to look at like his scary, you know, actual body. But yeah, that's his like space armor. He's like a space knight. That's what we like to call him. He's very sci-fi. This was a section we did where a little sequence where Barry is saving these people for some falling rocks. And it may appear as if he's flying, but of course he's not. He's just with the speed force and with how fast he is able to elevate quite quickly and change direction quite quickly. And there is that little bit of, you know, height he's able to get, you know, above these people to rescue them from this giant debris field that's falling on these Star Labs workers here. And that's kind of the cool little section there where he's here's this is one of the parademons bashing into the Batmobile as Bruce tries to make his way toward the reactor. Just fun. Yeah, and then here we go with Superman coming into direct conflict with Steppenwolf, and you know, the impact is you can imagine pretty intense, and they do go at it. But I think the here's a go. What was the inspiration behind Steppenwolf's design? You know, I just felt like I guess what I'm saying is, you know, when you see him in his like if you, what you're not seeing is that the armor actually, sometimes it lays flat when it moves with him sort of emotionally. Like there's moments when the Themyscirans are shooting him with arrows and the armor kind of is able to sort of capture those arrows. So the armor is like a living, breathing organism of its own. And so that's why, you know, it's flat and spiky and it does all those cool things depending on, you know, what situation he's in. So it was really, we've done a lot of work on trying to really capture the making that armor, you know, really be a character as well in the movie. Here's Batman fighting with parademons. Alfred was able to construct for him special gauntlets. And of course, Wonder Woman, you know, they do discuss whose idea this was and what was the inspiration. Because it's pretty obvious where that idea came from. And I'm not gonna tell you anything about this other than to say this was a sequence we've worked long and hard on, and you'll see more of it in the motion picture. But suffice it to say, it is what you see there, I guess. Here we are out at the Kent farm. This was a shot that I drew. I think I might have even released this frame, the storyboard, that I drew this really quite early on in the in the making of the film. I drew it, this is almost the exact frame. I was worried about this tree over here because in Leavesden, you know, we had to rebuild the Kent farm in England. And so we had built it at this airport and I was worried we'd get that tree to work. And I think it worked really great. Planted that corn. So yeah, it was, this is kind of a magical moment, you know, sort of Clark kind of being reborn into the memories of his life in Kansas. And then of course this reunion shot coming, you know, pretty beautiful moment between these three actors that I've been with for, you know, eight plus years. So it's kind of fun for me to see this as well. here's Cyborg sort of discovering and thinking about his powers, what is possible to him. You know, I guess when you sort of think about like what is Cyborg capable of in a technological world, because no firewall can defy him, nothing can, there's no encryption that he just sees, like if there's an encrypted, like, you know, cybersecurity system, he would just like, it would just look like nothing to him. He'd just walk right through it. And so anything that's on a technological grid or platform, he would be able to just, like, for instance, nuclear warheads, that's easy, like launch them in a second. There's a question here. How many times did they have to rebuild the Kent Farm in Plano? I think we built it twice in Plano, Illinois, or maybe I thought we kept it between, but I might be wrong about this, between BBS or between Man of Steel and BBS. I thought we kept it up between those two movies, but I can't remember exactly. But I do know it was out there for quite a while. And then I do believe we had to reconstruct it. And then we had to rebuild it again in England. So here's the old Atlantean king using the golden trident to sort of a little display of its power. This is during the Defenders of Earth fighting with the parademons and Uxus. And actually the Atlantean king does play a role in the, so we sort of get to see like what powers, like how the Defenders of Earth could work together and may have to work together in the future to deflect an alien invasion. Here is Cyborg saving a police officer at Heroes Park. That police officer happens to be the original Jimmy Olsen, a little cameo we did with him. So that was fun. You better move. And then here is Flash making his way through a psychedelic landscape. And I think this is just something you're going to see in the movie. Poof, poof. And then here is the Justice League on the edge of the reactor in Pozharnov, and sort of the team as they should and will be. Kind of, to me, this is like a very quintessential Justice League moment. And it, I love shooting it. I think I put up a still that I shot with my Leica of them just against green screen. And it was really fun to sort of shoot this shot because you got to sort of put them all together in what the dream was, you know. I think that's fun. I'm just looking here at these. Here's a question that says, would you say Flash is more swimming than running through space? That's the impression I get from the movements. That's about the Flash shots. If you want to think about it that way, I think that's fine. But I think that, he's definitely, he's kind of having to do this sort of cosmic run. So it's definitely, that's sort of the impression, sure. Let's see if there's any more questions here. No. I'm going to just continue here to the next one. And this is, if you notice in this shot, maybe you don't see it in the shot yet, but this is the flying fox, you know, rising up to meet them. I kind of like, I was like, the vehicle sort of integration, you know, it's very sort of iconic when you combine the sort of the entirety of sort of Justice League and their, you know, and their vehicle and their what they're capable of and all that, and the sun rising, and it's just fun to do. And also Cyborg is piloting the ship, because that's one of the things he can do. What's this say? Yeah, the bat suit that we did for the third battle of this movie he knew that, just like he was kind of doing the, you know, trying to build the Flying Fox and all of the stuff that he was working on, clearly he was trying to work on some armor. He knew he'd be facing off against things he had never probably faced off against before. And I think that kind of is the idea behind some of the upgrades he did to his bat suit for this battle. But I think in future battles, I would have him probably go back to his BBS suit, because that's my favorite suit for him. And it's the one, basically, frankly, that's the one you see him in the future in, you know, because I think this one gets destroyed. I don't know how, but, you know. Here's a question. What was your favorite shot you were able to put in this trailer so far? You know, there's so many. I'm really enjoying a lot of this stuff. But, you know, one of my favorites is this Batman shot. It's just, you know, one of my favorite Batman shots. But I feel like it's a cornucopia of fun stuff. So I'm not going to pick a child right now. And then we have this little sequence where Barry, talks about what are we going to do? This guy's like a destroyer of worlds. We see this little quick shot montage of the team. Cyborg, this is again in the Wayne Aerospace hangar. You can see the windows up there. You can see the then Batman, Bruce Wayne, Ben is telling us what we're going to, that he has confidence. Here's Jason again with this, you know, sunlight streaming in behind him. And then Wonder Woman as well in this little, you know, this is in their, in the scene where they, kind of come together for the first time, and they're kind of trying to figure out how they're going to go forward. What is the mother box? What is it used for? Why do they want it? You know, frankly, are they a team? Can they work together? And I think and it's mostly a conflict between, Aquaman and Cyborg. They have the main conflict in the scene. Aquaman and Cyborg, I think Aquaman doesn't trust Cyborg. He thinks Cyborg is a little too similar, if you will, to the Mother Box technology, which he is. And I think that, Vic knows a lot about the Mother Boxes, maybe more than, you know, they're suspicious of his knowledge of the Mother Box. And so maybe the team is justified in their suspicion, but clearly not, because it's just is what it is. And then us united, which is kind of our call sign right now, us united, as a group. And so this is, maybe a call right now to, if you can, and if you think of it, to join the link go give a little bit to AFSP. You know, we're in a quite a tough time right now with this pandemic, and there's a lot of people, you know, it's not, a lot of people need help, and it never hurts to. And then HBO Max, 2021. So we don't have an exact date, but that will be soon. So I'm going to stop sharing this video. And yeah, that was fun. I'm going to do, let's just see if there's any more questions. I'm sure there's a million, but let's see. Here's another. Is there a hanger in the Batcave? There's not a hanger in the Batcave. I think I was pretty clear about that. The idea is that, and you'll see it, and there's a big shot of it in the movie where you see that Wayne Aerospace is right on the harbor and that it's a big giant facility that's kind of defunct. And that's where Bruce is working. And that's where Wonder Woman comes and meets him. Later on, they go to the Batcave. Once Bruce feels more comfortable with the team. But there's no real hangar in the Batcave. It's kind of the hangar. The Batcave is kind of what you've seen in BVS. That's the sort of limits of it. There's an armory where the Robin costume is. That's kind of over on the right. And then there's the sort of lab control area. That's kind of the elevated sort of concrete structure that's above. Then the garage area where the Batmobile is. And then there's a small landing pad for the Batwing that clearly has been destroyed. And he has yet to build a new, I think he's working on a new vehicle for what I think he believes is the real coming war. So we'll see. Hang on, there's one more here. Yeah, Batman and Superman have a small reunion in the movie. I think there's more to come with, there would have been more to come with in this post Justice League world, like now what is the relationship between Batman and Superman? I think that that's something that I want to sort of let, have them at a small reunion, but that seems like a bigger story. So that's yet to come. Well, guys, that was fun. I hope you guys enjoyed me pulling through the trailer. I had a great time looking at these shots. It's funny because I'm editing the movie now, so I see we are, I am looking at the actual visual effect shots because the cut is locked. So I'm just looking every day at these shots as they come in, and it's really exciting. And I'm excited for you guys to see the giant amount of movie that you have coming your way in 2021 on HBO Max. Don't also forget that, you know, it is probably a solid 2.5 hours of unseen footage in this movie, I would imagine, something like that. That's going to be fun, I think, for everyone to experience this for the first time. So, thank you guys for checking this out. Don't forget to go grab a shirt or something from Ink to the People. And, you know, let's keep the drumbeat going for AFSP and our important work with suicide prevention. So thank you guys. Appreciate it. And more to come. So thank you so much.